your secret would be splattered up on the screen for the TV audience to see. And the panel got a couple of clues and they had to guess what your secret was. Well, what our secret was that we were the men from the Snowy River. Anyway, these were recorded in Brisbane and they used to record them on a Sunday and they'd record three or four programs in one hit on a Sunday. So pre-recorded, you see. And Ulick and I walked into the studio there and there was this girl doing her piece for you know, an earlier program. A very stunning pair of legs. And she was a very, very attractive lady and didn't see any more of her at all. But then Ulick and I went on, we did our bit. We got out to the airport, and there were these people, a whole swag of people who had been on these earlier programs, and they were well and truly on the way because the plane, the earlier flight from Brisbane back to Sydney had been cancelled because of some mechanical problem, and we were all going to be flown back on a Fokker Friendship when it arrived. In the meantime, beers on Reg Grundy's, you know, so it was good. And of course, this lady was there, and her name happened to be Lindy McGregor. She came from Orange, and we ended up getting married in July 1968. But before I could ask her father if I could marry his daughter, I had to have a decent job. Once all this music had completely fallen through, I, you know, basically I'd been working on building sites. I did a stint in a kitty litter factory too, somewhere out near Parramatta, which was a dreadful job. And I used to end up going up to Taylor Square at 2 o'clock in the morning to pick up the Sydney Morning Herald, find out where they want to build as labourers and get out to the site in time to be, you know, first in line or whatever. It was all pretty horrible. And so I suddenly realised, well, you know, I've got to have a decent job if I'm going to ask Doug McGregor if I can marry his daughter. And the only way to do that is to get back into journalism. And the only way I could do that was to, I tried hogging myself around Sydney without much success. I ended up getting a C-grade job on the Northwest Courier in Narrabri, up in northern New South Wales. And I went up there, and I wasn't there all that long. I literally used it as a stepping stone. And I was probably only there 3-4 months. And I got a, successfully managed to get myself back into AUP, but in their Sydney office. And so I thought, well, this is great, you know, and things all sort of started coming together. But when I first turned up at AUP, the general manager came out and said, oh, yes, sir, you're the new chap, aren't you, Paul Davey? That's right. That's right, you work for us down in Canberra in Parliament. And, okay, well, you can, your first assignment, state parliamentary rounds. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, not back into bloody politics. But I sort of realised that, you know, I was going to get married and I had responsibilities, so I had no more room for idle mistakes. And
were you more interested in politics at this stage?
Not particularly. And, excuse me, I actually went back and to the boss and said, look, you know, I'm not too good on the political stuff, you know. Any chance you can put me onto general rounds? But he did that, and then I worked on the overseas desk as well, subbing overseas wires and things like that. And I got married while I was working there. We got married up in Orange. He very generously put me on an early shift on Friday, so I finished at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and put me on a late shift on Monday, so I didn't start until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We got married in Orange, had one night at Janolan Caves for a honeymoon ago, and got back to work.
And that's 1968, is it?
That was 68, yeah. July 13th was the date we got married, yeah.
I'd like to go back a bit to ask a bit more about the press gallery in Canberra. I know you didn't like your time there. But were you there, what, a few months, was it? Or?
Yes, and it would only have been a few months. Alan Reid was undeniably probably the doyen of the gallery in those days. Laurie Oakes was around in those days. Michelle Grattan was around. I think Paul Kelly was there for The Australian, which was a pretty young newspaper then. It only started in about 1964. And the gallery, I mean, it was very small, tiny. The AUP office was a little long section just opposite the door that went into the House of Reps from the right-hand side of the press gallery. So you went into in there, and the AUP office was just running along there, and it literally you had enough room in there for barely for three people, and a couple of telex machines, and that was it. And everything was really cramped. But it was fun. It was. I mean, I enjoyed the atmosphere of the place. It was just I didn't like that. I just didn't understand politics, basically. I was just out of my depth with the job. But I enjoyed the sort of camaraderie of the gallery. It always felt good walking into Parliament too. You know, you sort of felt that you were someone a bit important walking into a building like this. But I was nonetheless very pleased to get out of it at that point.
Do you remember what the issues were at the time?
Oh, no. No, and that's probably because I didn't understand them.
Yeah.
Probably. I was, again, trying to wrap my mind around this a bit earlier on, you know, when Holt disappeared in December 67, I don't think I was around. So I think I must have bolted before then. So I would only have been here quite a short time, because I'm sure, obviously, had I been in the gallery at that time, I would have certainly have remembered that, but I don't.
Well, how did the job actually come about? What, did you have connections here?
No. It was advertised. I saw an advertisement. It would undoubtedly have been in the Sydney Morning Herald. You know, D-grade journalist, Australian United Press, Canberra. You know, apply applications too. So I wrote a letter and applied.
And then was there an interview for the job?
Oh yeah.
You had to come to Canberra for the interview.
Yeah, I drove to Canberra for the job, and had this interview with Ken Braddock. What I recall, it was a very brief interview, and he had no other applicants. It seemed to me that he basically decided he was going to offer me the job anyway, and he did. And of course, I accepted. I was delighted to have got the job, because I was really looking forward to going back to the editor at the Advertiser and giving him my notice on the grounds that I've got a promotion to a D-grade journalist.
Was there any kind of security clearance in getting
not in those days? No, not at all. That all came in, to varying degrees, considerably later on. No, anybody could wander in and out of the place then.
And was that your first time in Canberra?
Yep.
What, can you give us a description of what Canberra was like back then?
It was very small. I mean, what you now have as the central business district of Canberra, you know, East Block, West Block, they were there, and that was it. And there was a bit around East Block and West Block, but nothing like there is now. So it was much smaller. It really was just a sort of large country town. It was nothing like as bustling as Wagga was.
Ah, yes.
No. I mean, Wagga was quite a bustling place. And I'm guessing that it must have been bigger than Wagga, I would have thought, but not by much. The key buildings that we still see around Canberra today were by and large there. Your National Library and all those iconic sort of buildings. As I say, you know, I mean, Curtin was the sort of southernmost extremity of the place. they were in the process of building the hospital, and I think the Woden Valley Shopping Centre was being built. So Woden Valley was beginning to be being opened up. Certainly nothing beyond that. And when you drove out of town, going north, it sort of stopped at the showground. There was nothing else beyond that, you know. And it was a sort of a goat track out to Hall.
What about the social life here?
I didn't have much of a social life beyond, and that's another reason probably why I didn't particularly like it, you know, beyond a few beers with the guys after work or, you know, in the non-members bar, they'd all go home, I'd go home. My home was a single room unit in Curtin, didn't even have a TV. So really, it was probably a bit lonely. It was a bit of a lonely existence, yeah.
Were you homesick at all during this period?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I basically pretty quickly resolved myself to the fact that I was going to make it a success in Australia. And the earlier times, or the time in Wagga, I think helped me get into that frame of mind a lot, because I really enjoyed living in Wagga. I started to really appreciate how lucky I had been in actually having that opportunity to go there, because had I not had that, I probably would have ended up in a migrant hostel in Sydney, full of the classic whinging Poms, and I might very well have become one myself and gone home, you know. I mean, it could have been a complete disaster. But the fact that I got out into a country town and into country communities, and I've always loved them since, I regard myself more as a bushy now, even though I spend a lot of time living in Sydney now still, but I've got a place out at Mudgee in New South Wales, and my wife was a country girl. My heart's out there, but it's that experience there, as I say, it sort of really convinced me that Australia is going to be my home. So I don't think I got homesick. I probably sat there on my own in that little flat and thought, Christ, what have I done? Not meaning leaving England, but I buggered it up the way I got out of the Daily Advertiser, and I've bitten off more than I can chew here, and you know, I've made a mistake. And when you do that, when you're on your own, there's not much you can do about it.
Were you in regular contact with your auntie and uncle?
Yes, but I never wrote to them about my troubles.
No,
I kept them. I just wrote, you know, friendly, newsy, happy letters to them. I kept any difficulties to myself. Didn't want to worry them about it. Didn't want them to know. Oh my God, you know, is this bloke going to turn out like his brother? Yeah, another burden.
How was the press gallery organised then?
Well, how? What do you mean by organised?
You know, you turn up for work.
Yeah.
Is there a manager who kind of who would tell you what to do?
With us, the three of us there, we did shifts, generally starting sort of midday, late morning, midday, if the Parliament was sitting, because it'd sit through till, you know, 11 o'clock or more at night. And you had to cover, had to be, make sure the place was, the Parliament was covered. And Ken, he was the chief of staff, Ken Broderick. Ken Braddock. He worked out the shifts. He'd tell Ken Begg when he was on and what he was going to do, and he'd tell me when I was on and what I was going to do. And the same thing happened in all other bureaus. So I mean, the ABC had a chief of staff. They would organise their staff. AAP had organised theirs, and likewise the newspapers. So it was all done individually. There was no sort of central manager, if you like, of, right, I'm in charge of the press gallery and this is how it's going to work. Yep. Everybody worked independently, all trying to scoop each other.
Did you have any particular successes yourself?
Not then. When I was back in the gallery, but we're moving forward to 1978, then you might want to hold that.
We'll talk about that. Was there a pecking order among the journalists?
Yeah. Yes, there was. I mean, the likes of Alan Reid, for instance, you know, I mean, he had enormous respect, not only amongst the journalists, but amongst the politicians. I mean, they knew that he was a man who, you know, commanded a lot of influence, who could get on to stories and sources of information which were quite mind-blowing to some extent. And then when you got down to my level, you know, I was just a grunt in the place, basically. I mean, really doing the dog's body work, you know, cover the adjournment debate, because it's the last thing on at night and there's usually not much there, but you've got to cover it just in case, you know, stuff like that. There's a debate going on wool stabilisation. Get out there and cover that, because we service country newspapers and they're going to want a story on it. Wouldn't have to be a long story because it's wire services. They only need to be fairly short, but you had to know what was the key point you were looking for, or the key point to report. And I knew absolutely bugger all about wool stabilisation, so it was, you know, it was a bit of a challenge. And I didn't, you know, I wasn't going to turn around to Ken Braddock and say, look, mate, I'm sorry, but I don't know what the hell I'm doing. That would have cost me the job, so I had to bumble on. You know, you could ask a journo sitting next to you, or who you knew was covering the same story, look, you know, I think I'm a bit stuck here, can you help me at all? They'd either say yes or no, depending how big the story was. But if it was just a general piece of legislation or something, nobody minded.
Mm-hmm. So there was no mentoring?
No.
What about friendships? Were friendships formed among the journos in the gallery?
Well, they certainly do, but I wasn't there then at that stage long enough to strike what you might call strong friendships. Although, I mean, Ken Begg and I still, we don't see each other very frequently, but any time we run into each other, we recognise each other, and we both remember that, oh yeah, you know, we first worked together at AUP in 1967, you know. So it's possibly associations rather than friendships, but yeah.
What about the accessibility of the politicians? Did you have any experience of that at that time?
Well, again, not a lot, because I was such a junior reporter, and basically if there was a politician to be interviewed, it was done by one of the other two.
Mm. And did you get a sense of the journalists having a political persuasion at all?
No, I didn't. I didn't at that point. And again, probably because of my ignorance, I wouldn't have known if they had or not.
And were there things you liked about the job in the gallery?
No, there was nothing I liked about that job. Not a thing. I really got myself into a bit of a cold sweat about the fact that here I was, I'd taken on a job I'd been accepted for, and I'd taken on a job, A, that I knew I couldn't do, B, that I didn't enjoy, and therefore C, I was in trouble here, and how was I going to get out of it? And it was a bold thing to try and do, and it was as it turned out, it was a good thing. But at the time, it was quite sort of frightening. Because it dented my sort of faith in my ability to become a journalist. You know, I mean, I was still a very raw young guy, and I should not have had a grading. I mean, basically, I shouldn't have had a grading. I should probably have been a second or third year cadet. But it happened in the industry at that stage. You know, everybody truncated cadetships. It was just a done thing to do, you know, and that was the way it happened for me. It would have been far better if I'd managed to get a grading, for instance, on maybe a metropolitan paper or maybe another regional paper. But had I done that, I would never have had that introduction to Canberra. And who knows? I mean, would I ever have come back to would I ever have gone to Canberra at all? I mean, I've never planned anything in my life. It's basically just about everything. I mean, even coming out, the decision to come to Australia was hardly planned. It evolved, and just about everything else that's happened to me is either been good luck, and or taking advantage of opportunity as it's come along. I, over the years, I think luck has shone my way quite a few times.
Paul, I'm thinking that's quite a positive note to conclude today's session.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you very much for today, and I look forward to doing at least another session in the future. Of course, we're heading towards the 1970s now, aren't we, with the chronology. So thank you very much
for today. All right, that's a pleasure, Barry. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed it too.